You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Undocumented immigrants make up the backbone of New York's food service industry. Working behind the scenes at countless restaurants, earn a living for themselves and their families back home, often enduring low wages and hostile management along the way. But in 2012, employees at one Upper East Side restaurant decided to do something about it. Led by sandwich maker Mahoma Lopez, employees at the 63rd Street branch of the Hot and Crusty chain formed a union, an act unheard of among low-wage restaurant workers. Rachel Lears and Robin Blotnick have made a documentary about their story called The Hand That Feeds. It opens tomorrow at Cinema Village on 12th Street. I'm very pleased to welcome Rachel and Robin to our show now.
Thanks so much for having us.
It's great to be here.
How did you learn about this story?
Well, Robin and I we'd been documenting Occupy Wall Street in the fall of 2011 when that was exploding here in New York City. And in early 2012, after the park had been evicted and things were sort of, it wasn't exactly clear where that movement was going, we met some folks connected with the Immigrant Worker Justice Group there, and we met Mahoma and some of the other workers and organizers that he was working with. And we really just had the feeling that they were going to be doing something interesting. They were already reaching out. They were undocumented immigrants reaching out to Occupy activists, potentially to help in an act of civil disobedience to occupy their store. And as filmmakers, that just kind of, a light bulb went off that this was going to be an interesting story to follow.
And you were there pretty much at the beginning.
That's right. We got in right before they voted their union in, and we reconstructed the early days of their organizing through interviews.
What kind of work conditions did the Hot and Crusty workers have to deal with?
They were facing the kinds of conditions that unfortunately are widespread in the restaurant industry in this country. Wage theft, which is being paid less than minimum wage, not being paid overtime. They didn't have paid sick leave. They were under the threat of being fired if they had to call in sick. And most, the issue that really, I think, motivated them the most was disrespect from their manager. There was verbal abuse and harassment, and they often spoke about dignity and respect being the kind of main demand that they had.
Well, you open the film with one worker counting his wages for the week, $290 for 60 hours of work, or that's less than $5 an hour without overtime. How are restaurants able to get away with paying their employees so little? Aren't the employees protected by the Federal National Labor Relations Act and New York State's Wage Theft Prevention Act?
It's true. Employees are protected by both of those laws, regardless of their immigration status. But the fact is that undocumented workers are really vulnerable to exploitation because many of them don't realize that they have rights under the law, and understandably, they're afraid to speak out. And I think these conditions are really set in the restaurant industry by some of the larger companies, and it's a policy in the restaurant industry that is perhaps unspoken, but it's so widespread.
So this was not specific to the 63rd Street branch of Hot and Crusty?
Well, the story that we filmed was specific to the 63rd Street branch, but I think it's important to remember that these conditions are very widespread in other restaurants in New York City and around the country.
So eventually, the workers wrote up a list of demands for management. What were they demanding?
Basically, to be paid minimum wage for those that weren't getting minimum wage. Overtime, they wanted a few paid vacation days. And as I said before, it was really the issue of respect. They wanted respect from the management and the way they were treated. Things as simple as saying please before asking them to do something.
And what happened when they approached management?
Basically, they the story kind of, the management responded by stalling, and then there was flyering outside their shops, which led to a negotiation. They sat down to negotiate with the management, and the lawyers for the other side told them, "We can't change the ongoing conditions. We can talk about what we owe you, the back wages that we owe you and that sort of thing. But we can't talk about changing the actual conditions in the shop because you're not a union. We're not obligated to negotiate with you." And that was when the workers got the idea of forming their own union.
One older employee, Margarito Lopez, a dishwasher, joined the union, even though he fears that he'll be unemployable if he's fired. He felt he'd be unemployable because he was older than the other workers?
Yeah, he said that a number of times. You know, I think there's a misconception out there that it's easy to get these jobs. You can just, if you lose one, you can just get another one really easily. But
At that pay,
exactly.
Probably true.
Well, except that Margarito said that that actually wasn't the case for him as an older worker, that he experienced a lot of discrimination in that regard. So he was very nervous about that, but he was very much motivated by his pride and his need to support his daughter back in Mexico, who is going to college. She's the first in her family to go to college, and that's very much what motivated him.
After they decided to start a union, they went to an established union and said, we'd like to have our own local here. What happened?
Well, the details of that were a little fuzzy on. Is that right?
Well, I think actually they
were turned down.
They were turned down by at least one major union because their shop was very small, and often major unions don't want to invest the resources to organize a shop that's only going to have about 25 workers in it. However, the Laundry Workers Center, which is not a union, it's a nonprofit organization that supports low-wage and immigrant workers, was able to walk them through the process legally of filing with the National Labor Relations Board to form their own independent union, and that's what they ended up doing.
How did they first become involved with the Laundry Workers Center?
It was really pure coincidence that one of the workers who had arrived more recently than some of the others, most of the main characters you see in the film had been working there for, you know, 6, 8, 10 years already. A newer worker had come from a shop that had previously organized, not to form a union, but he had come in contact with Virgilio Aran, who was the main organizer at that time and founder of Laundry Workers Center. So when the workers were sitting around, you know, talking after work about these conditions, you know, what are we going to do about this, this worker had the contact of Virgilio, and that's how they were able to begin the campaign.
Despite all the problems, weren't many of the workers opposed to the union?
Almost half the shop was opposed, which made the union election very nail-biting for everyone involved.
Because you need a majority.
You definitely need a majority. They did have a majority, and they believed that they could win. But the manager that had really provoked the most sort of anger from the workers had a whole lot of family members working at the shop, and they were obviously on the side of management. And there were others who...
Was there a cultural difference here? We're talking about mostly Spanish-speaking immigrants. What about management?
Well, actually, the manager in question was also a Spanish-speaking immigrant who had worked his way up from dishwasher. So I think in many ways that made it all the more painful and kind of insulting to them that he treated them so poorly.
My guests are the filmmakers behind The Hand That Feeds, which opens tomorrow at Cinema Village on 12th Street. They are... Rachel Lears, who's co-director, co-producer, and cinematographer, and Robin Blotnick, who's co-director, co-producer, and editor of the film. I guess you, as a married couple, you were able to work out the division of labor there. You mentioned that this all started when you were looking into the Occupy movement. The hot and crusty workers were initially puzzled by Occupy. Why was that?
Well, it's true. I think that really speaks to the cultural divide that existed at that time, you know, between the majority of Occupy activists and workers like the ones featured in the film. So they hadn't heard about the Occupy movement until they began organizing with Laundry Workers Center and some of the organizers there. It was right around during the fall of 2011 when they first began going to trainings and sort of beginning to do the behind-the-scenes work of this campaign. It was at the same time that Occupy was happening. So the organizers took them to meetings to begin sort of the process of gathering community support for this campaign. And that cultural juxtaposition was one of the things that really stood out to us as filmmakers as something that would be interesting to document and to explore.
And there was some connection, but not total connection.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was the need for the organizers were very intent upon the Occupy activists involved recognizing that the workers were really leading the struggle. I mean, they wanted to avoid the potential of having a bunch of activists come in and kind of take over. And fortunately, that did not happen.
I guess we shouldn't be surprised that after the union was formed, management approached Mahoma and another worker organizer, Gonzalo Jimenez, offering them management roles and a small stake in the restaurant in exchange for dissolving the union.
That's right. It's a very dramatic twist in our story. And the
you
choices...
must have been thrilled in a way because you want to keep the tension going when you're making a documentary. You never know where it's going to go.
Yeah, we were very concerned for our subjects and the trouble that it caused them. But we also, you know, in the back of our minds, were thinking, oh, my, wow, this is a story. We didn't expect it to take such a
But that's a very common tactic. You know, that happens a lot in these types of campaigns.
And Gonzalo took the offer.
Well, you know, we can't say with 100% certainty that he did. You know, as filmmakers, journalists, fact checkers, I would say there's a sliver of doubt there. I know that his co-workers were fairly certain that that's what happened. At the same time, though, even if he did agree to that, he didn't end up getting it because that business, he was essentially offered a stake in a business that then itself dissolved a few months later.
After they negotiated for years of back pay, the owners announced that they were closing the restaurant. Now, this was a money-making operation, wasn't it? It was just simply that they just didn't want to have to deal with these guys anymore?
The claim was that they were going out of business. And I think the workers and the organizers were very certain that this was a tactic to shut down the union organizing.
So on closing day, the hot and crusty workers and the laundry workers decided to occupy the restaurant. And that made the newspapers because it got kind of messy.
Well, messy in the sense that a few activists were arrested, although that was sort of the idea. You know, the idea was to go in and some of the activists who were U.S. citizens who could take that risk of performing civil disobedience and staying in the store even when the police and the management asked them to leave, you know, that was kind of the attention-grabbing spectacle that they were after.
How did people in the community respond?
Well, I think that was, for me, one of the most fun and interesting parts of the story was seeing the way this all unfolds on this particular block in the Upper East Side, which, you know, has its own very distinctive culture and demographic. And a lot of people in the community were very sympathetic to the workers. Others came by and lectured them about you know, how they should start their own business or work harder if they wanted to get rich. So it was a range of reactions, but the colorful characters.
I had no idea that these people did not have a lot of money to invest in starting their own business.
Amazingly, they seem to not have thought of that.
No. A potential buyer, Anthony Aluzzi, considers buying the restaurant during the sit-in. Was he willing to work with the union that in a way that the previous owners weren't?
Yes, the group he represented was willing to recognize the union and negotiate with them.
Now, even within the families, there was disagreement. Mahoma's wife, who's an English-speaking woman of Puerto Rican background, is skeptical of the efforts for a while. She worries that he's risking the family's livelihood by taking on Hot and Crusty, while he believes that she has too much faith in the system.
It's true. That conflict becomes one of the more interesting subplots in the film, I think. You know, in the end, she comes around to seeing that believing that the fight that he's engaged in is really worthwhile. And I think that was really one of the more moving transformations we witnessed.
But he has had a transformation. Now he has become a co-director of the Laundry Workers Center.
That's right. I think he found his true calling in organizing his shop.
Is he still working at the restaurant?
He is. Yeah, he still works there full time and organizes other restaurants and other businesses around the city in his spare time.
So the Hot and Crusty really continues under another name. How different is it?
Well, it is. It's very different now. So at 63rd Street and 2nd Avenue, the new restaurant is called Broad Kitchen. And most of the workers who appeared in the film and conducted this campaign are still working there, and the union is still in place, and the conditions are just night and day, the way they describe it.
There have been attempts to unionize a number of the fast food restaurants in New York, including some of the McDonald's restaurants. Will McDonald's decision to raise its minimum wage to $10 an hour keep the unions out?
I think that I think not, actually. So that campaign, the Fight for 15 campaign, I think it is – it deserves credit for a lot of this changing conversation on wages that's been happening in this country. And I think when you see companies like McDonald's, Walmart also recently, and Target also
raised
their –
Well, they're going to go up to $9.
Right. So McDonald's is topping that, and that's certainly a step in the right direction, and it's definitely due to the pressure that's happening. But I believe that the fight's going to continue.
Have any other restaurant workers successfully unionized?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there are restaurants that are members of major unions. There are also stories that we've heard about in immigrant communities in New York City and on the West Coast of workers' centers that have organized unions in different restaurants.
To be absolutely fair, I've spoken to restaurateurs, enlightened restaurateurs, who would not want to have the unions in their restaurants. We're talking about top-notch restaurants, because when they have restaurants in hotels where they have the union, there's always a problem. People just say, okay, 5 o'clock, I'm gone. Even if the dining room is full, they really unions, the restaurant workers union, at least the ones that I understand are powerful here, isn't necessarily the best union in America. Have you heard? I mean, I don't know if you've heard about any of that.
Well, I mean, I think people have a lot of critiques of big organized labor, and there are definitely some criticisms to be drawn.
Well, there are good unions and less good unions.
Absolutely. Not all unions are the same. I think what makes our story kind of unique is that they start their own union, and in so doing, I think they show kind of what's at the core of what a union really is, which is a bunch of workers coming together to have a voice that they wouldn't have otherwise in the place where they work.
The Hand That Feeds opens tomorrow at Cinema Village on 12th Street. My great thanks to Robin Blotnick and Rachel Lears for coming by to talk about it.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. It was great.